A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 500. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about Object Z. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, here we are in episode 500, and we have an ITV series from 1965. Six 25-minute episodes in black and white. It's a fairly recent release on disc, and it is a great opportunity for us to talk about some fairly early television science fiction, Brian. Nice to be back in the 60s.
Yes, and a wonderful surprise having this release come out. It was hanging around in the archives, and most of us didn't know about it.
Indeed. And of course, Object Z is the mysterious object of the title, which is approaching Earth, and the consequences of what this object will mean for the Earth and humanity is the main thrust of this show. And it's actually quite interesting stuff for us to talk about here on British Invaders, episode 500.
Yes, absolutely. Getting more into the setup, the crew of a television science program are seen visiting this astronomy observatory. They're visiting a big telescope, and the scientists there are showing them an interesting anomaly that they have just recently detected. And it appears to be this unknown object that is moving towards Earth, and moving towards Earth very quickly.
It is indeed. And of course, news of this soon spreads. It becomes apparent that other telescopes around the world have also spotted Object Z. And interestingly, our British TV journalist crew get to sort of follow the story. They are our sort of point of entry into the story. They get to go along and see all the updates as they're happening. And of course, there is great speculation as to what Object Z is. Is it a giant asteroid? We note that the first episode is called The Meteor, but I think asteroid would be more correct, Brian.
Yeah, you could possibly go either way with something like that.
Anyway, whatever it is, it's certainly huge in size, and the implications, if it strikes the Earth, could be devastating.
And the governments of the world are scrambling to prepare for this, and the results are varying and often quite scary.
They are indeed, yes.
So looking at the characters, Peter Barry, played by Trevor Bannister, is the presenter of this TV science show. He is an intelligent and charismatic journalist with a strong moral compass, and he will become the lead reporter on this story. So he's our view on it from that perspective. And of course, Trevor Bannister is best known for being Mr. Lucas in Are You Being Served?
Yes, probably more familiar to British TV viewers for that.
And to some viewers overseas in the US and Canada too, and had a following.
Diana Winters, played by Celia Bannerman, she is Peter Barry's assistant, or the production team's assistant. I made a note that she sort of gets to perform the role similar to the Doctor's Companion, in that she asks a lot of questions so people can explain parts of the plot to her. She also gets to wear some rather groovy 1960s fashions, which is quite nice. She does get ordered around and bossed around by men quite a bit, often being told to go and make a cup of tea or coffee and so on. But she's there, and like I say, she does help a lot of the exposition get delivered to the viewer by asking interesting questions.
Yeah, she's curious and she seems intelligent, so there is something there to her as a character, which is nice. Sir John Chandos, played by Julian Summers, is the British Prime Minister who is a very honorable politician wrestling with the difficulties of Object Z and believes in being open and telling the truth to the British public.
Even when the truth is rather unpalatable.
Yes, there are a number of sort of morally upstanding characters in this, and he is one of them.
Then we have to have a chief scientist. Here we have Dr. Ramsey, played by Ralph Nosek. He is the sort of scientific advisor to the government. He's a little bit like Professor Quatermass, particularly in that he appears to be an expert in pretty much everything, which is a reasonably common trope in television. You need a scientific voice to explain everything to us. He explains particularly how the world is reacting to Object Z and the plans that the scientific community are making to deal with the approach of this object.
That's right. We also have Keeler, played by Arthur White. He is a populist, extremist political figure who believes that Great Britain should stand alone and protect its weapons and be ready to pull all its resources in internally and be on the defensive against other countries. And he gives speeches at rallies that are powerful and a bit terrifying and unfortunately a little bit too familiar, maybe.
They are indeed. And we'll talk a little bit more about Keeler and his views and his speeches next episode.
Yes, I think so. So Object Z is something like 6 miles across, and it is approaching Earth very fast, and it is realized that if it does strike, the damage will be horrendous. It'll be huge.
Absolutely. Huge impact on the Earth, and so countries are reacting. They're building shelters to house their populations, but of course, Object Z is coming in fast, and they don't have a lot of time. So in Britain, they're probably only going to be able to complete shelters enough for about 10% of the population. And so those 1 in 10 places are to be decided by a lottery. And interestingly, and perhaps slightly surprisingly, that even the Prime Minister goes into the lottery and does not gain a place. We talked about his morality, Brian. He is sort of, in a way, slightly proud that he was in the lottery and didn't get a place. But of course, if you've got the news covering this story, if you've got this supply or a shortage of shelter space, then perhaps it's not surprising that we also see another element we've become oh too familiar with, Brian. Rumours and conspiracy theories are spreading about what is Object Z and what is behind all of this.
Yes, absolutely. And you have the conspiracy theories, you have panic, you have all of these sorts of things. Meanwhile, the scientists and the military are setting up a missile to fire at Object Z to either destroy or divert it. So there is an attempt to avert this situation with that type of effort as well.
Grim and gripping stuff.
Indeed. So getting into our production notes, Object Z was a production of Associated Rediffusion for ITV. Rediffusion was one of the two initial divisions of ITV. ITV was first set up in 1955. That's when it went on the air initially. And now this is 10 years later, it still has those initial companies set up for production.
Yeah, this is slightly complicated and certainly interesting because initially they had two divisions of ITV, as you said, Brian. They had Associated Rediffusion, which covered weekday programs, and then ABC would cover the weekend programming, rather strangely. Now, later on, ITV will split into its more regional networks that we have talked about, I think, whenever we've covered an ITV show from the 60s or 70s. 70s, they became very well known. Some of them specialized, for instance, in children's television or something like that. But also it meant those slightly uneven broadcast time slots, and they would sometimes show episodes in different orders, which always causes a bit of confusion. And we've talked about that a few times as we've gone along.
Yes, certainly that was a major factor in the 70s and in the 60s as well. Maybe at this point in 65, it was not quite on that model yet, and rediffusion was still there.
So we've got rediffusion. We've got Christopher McMaster. Now, he at the time was probably best known as a director, one of the regular directors on Coronation Street. For anybody who doesn't know, Coronation Street is an extremely popular, long-running ITV soap opera that started in 1960 and continues to the present day. Christopher McMaster was or did direct 83 episodes of the show between 1963 and 1966. But while he was doing that, he turned his hand to a bit of writing, Brian.
Yes, he was interested in writing, and he took some of his limited spare time to write this script that he called The Strangers. And he assumed that it would be for an adult audience. But ITV saw this, and it was actually their head of children's programming, Michael Siegel, who wanted to take this and turn it into something for a younger audience. And this would ultimately become Object Z. So it's possible that this was something of a reaction to Doctor Who from ITV. Doctor Who was sort of at the beginning of programming for children or children and adults that acknowledged that children could enjoy more adult and more complex drama rather than some of the earlier types of things that were aimed at them.
Yeah, very interesting. And also, at some point, the title gets changed to Object Z. And before we were recording, you were mentioning, Brian, possibly another response to another show, this time from 1961, which was Andromeda.
Yeah, that was also sort of feeling like it was in the sort of science fiction genre that was quite intelligent, that was something popularized with Quatermass. A for Andromeda felt like it was following in on that, and it did have something unknown coming in from space as well. So yeah, it does have something that feels a little bit familiar from that too.
So all of these other shows are sort of in the mix for the creation of this show. The title gets changed. Children's TV have got it. Christopher McMaster gets asked to make some changes to the script to make it more suitable to its younger audience. We're not sure if he did make an awful lot of changes, and certainly he resisted any suggestion that there be a sort of younger character introduced into the cast. So there's no sort of audience surrogate teenager in this, unlike when we watched another show, Pathfinders from Space, or that series, which very much had kids in the show to give the audience somebody to sort of recognize as themselves.
Yes, that was very much an earlier style of children's storytelling for television. This had clearly moved past that, and I was quite surprised to hear that it was coming out of the children's division and had that earlier time slot at all.
Yeah. Now, to direct it, ITV turned to producer-director Daphne Shadwell. She had been trained by the BBC, but had moved to ITV when it started broadcasting in 1955 and been with the network basically the whole time. She'd done quite a bit of children's television by this stage. She's perhaps famous for later, 2 years after this, in 1967, directing a show called Do Not Adjust Your Set, a sketch comedy show that is famous now for introducing several members of the Monty Python team to the screen for the first time, and also members of what would become the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band, a famous sort of satirical music group. That was in 67, but here she is in 65, with quite a lot of experience already directing this show. And another interesting snippet from the production of this is how quick turnaround times were. Christopher McMaster, we know, signed his writing contract sometime in late August. And basically in October, they're in production and rehearsals, Brian.
Yeah, it was a very different world of television. And I think in Great Britain, it was very much influenced by rep theater, which was a very big thing at the time, where repertory companies would be often performing one week's play while rehearsing the play that would they'd be performing the next week. So the idea of putting together drama for stage on a very quick timeline was something that was being done everywhere. And I think that sort of translated to television in some ways. And what we would get for Object Z would be 3 days of rehearsal, Wednesday to Friday, where the crew would also be preparing the sets. And then on Monday, there would be a final camera rehearsal with cameras and lighting and everything. And then they'd be recording the episode, which would be broadcast the next day. So it was that really tight timeline that they used in the 60s and has really not been like that on television since then.
No, quite demanding.
That's right. You generally couldn't reshoot anything. You had your episode divided into blocks that you would perform straight through. If an actor missed a line, you would just carry straight on. There is a moment in episode 5 of this where the actor playing the American president stumbles over the line, sort of apologizes for it and repeats it. And we were no longer doing the live broadcasts that they were doing in the 50s and very early 60s, but it was still pretty close to that in some ways.
It was indeed a slightly nervy, as you say, theatrical, slightly sweaty experience for the actors, it would seem. Now, most of Object Z is shot on sets with painted backdrops for when characters are meant to be outdoors, you know, things that look fairly obvious to us nowadays, but perhaps were less apparent on the televisions of the time. I noted there was one sequence of the TV producer walking out of the studios and through the streets of a deserted London at one point in the plot, which I think might be the only sequence I noted that was actually filmed outside, Brian.
Yeah, there isn't that much that's intended to be outside in this. It's sort of a more indoor type of production on the whole.
But of course, for other sequences, there was a lot of stock footage used. So particularly of rather tense scenes in missile control rooms, rockets launching, that sort of thing. And of course, stock footage at one point of a cricket match, which was rather charming to see in amongst all these other rather tense sequences.
Yes, yeah, you certainly have all that kind of thing in this. Object Z was broadcast starting on Tuesday, October 19th, 1965, at 5:25 p.m., which was the last children's TV slot before the ITV News was broadcast.
Yeah, and that's interesting because the notes booklet that comes with the discs, which we will talk about in a moment, the notes booklet talks a little bit about what was happening in the world at that time. So if an older child had gone straight from Object Z into watching the ITV Evening News, they might have seen information or news broadcasts about the Vietnam War or about the conflict that had broken out between India and Pakistan in Kashmir. So there was a certain amount of tense real-world stuff going on alongside the fictional world-shattering implications of Object Z. It's just interesting to think about its audience and what they were going from one to the other.
Yes, it was definitely a tense time and that being reflected in this. And that is what this type of science fiction does well.
Now, Object Z, as far as we know, was apparently never repeated. But fortunately for us, it was tele-recorded with a film recorder, a Mekau film recorder, pointed at an in-studio monitor. This was a quite common technique in early television as a way of recording something for some sort of preservation or later broadcast.
Yes, almost all of our television recordings that exist from the 50s and 60s were done that way. And it was slightly more elaborate than pointing a camera at the monitor, but that was the general idea. And that recording has actually been in the ITV archive ever since. ITV did junk a lot of their recordings, just as the BBC did. ITV did lots of that. But in this case, this one was saved. They held on to it. And those recordings were given to the BFI, the British Film Institute, for a 2K restoration, for digital restoration. And it seems like this was never actually a lost set of episodes that was recovered. It's been in the archives all along, but it was something that was just not that well known as a show.
Brought back to us because ITV checked the archives and then handed it over to the BFI.
Yes, the folks at the BFI thought this would make a good release and were very glad they did. The reviews of the series at the time were positive, although many were concerned that it might not be suitable for its intended audience. So we weren't the only ones to be surprised that this was done as a children's show.
Yeah, apparently not. But it was successful, so successful that ITV made a sequel the following year, 1966, called Object Z Returns. Now, in another little snippet I found from the production notes booklet was that Daphne Shadwell had to deal with the issue of her £200 overspend on the first series, but she reassured the controllers that she could bring this into her second budget and they would get away because the sets were already built and they could reuse certain bits and pieces. So that £200 was carried forward and she had to deal with it in the second one. Astonishing to think of them quibbling over £200, but a lot of money then, Brian.
Yes, interesting. Object Z Returns, as you say, was directed again by Daphne Shadwell, also again written by Christopher McMaster, and had a lot of the same cast, Bannister, Nosek, and Summers, but it did not survive in the archives. It is entirely missing, so we don't get to look at the sequel, unfortunately.
Great shame, but we do have Object Z, and it's time to tell you about the availability. Hopefully, we've piqued your interest for this slightly obscure show from the 1960s. So, we have the British Film Institute in September 2025 issuing a dual disc release. So, that means you get it both on DVD and Blu-ray in the same set. You get all six episodes. You get commentaries on all six episodes by a variety of TV historians. I've listened to them all, and I would say I think probably the most interesting is the commentary on episode 6 by Toby Haydock and the actor Gwen Bannerman. That one's quite good, Brian, and might be worth listening to.
I might have to check that one out. I haven't looked at it.
And there's also, as I've mentioned, you've got this extensive notes booklet, which I would say, as ever, contains spoilers. So watch the show before you read the notes. And there's also some image galleries. There's a shooting script for episode 1. So it's a big package. Also, talking about lost shows, there is the only surviving clips from another Rediffusion series called Sierra 9. This was a 1963 serial about a fictional agency who travel the world protecting us from scientific disasters. So it sounds, I know we're always comparing things to other shows, Brian, but it does sound a little bit like a prototype Doomwatch.
Or maybe a prototype Doomwatch meets Thunderbirds.
Indeed, yes. There are only some silent clips from one episode that survive, and they're presented here with a commentary from the TV historian Vic Pratt. So you've got all of this on these two discs from the BFI, all for the price of £20, which I think is extremely reasonable for what this is and the way they've presented it to us. And I would say also, although it's not streaming, it is on cinemaparadiso.co.uk to rent, it seems. I don't know if you only get the DVD version, but it does seem to be on there at the moment, as far as I can tell. What about in Region 1, Brian?
In Region 1, there is no release. So at the moment, it looks like your best shot is probably just importing it from the UK with amazon.co.uk or something like that. That's what I did.
Okay. But you get, of course, the two discs. And you presumably, what about the region control on the DVD? Do you need a region-free player?
Yes, I haven't checked. I believe you would for the DVD for sure. For the Blu-ray, I'm not sure if it's region locked or not.
Right, okay.
I believe some BFI discs are and others are not, so I'm not certain.
Okay, so it's interesting. Anyway, you can get hold of it, which is good. So next time, Object Z is getting closer, and we will go into a little bit more detail of the story with inevitably some minor spoilers coming up. So if you don't want to be spoiled, watch the show before our next episode. And we're going to talk about some of the remarkable stuff this show does for its intended youthful audience. So there's some good stuff to talk about. There's a couple of moments that are perhaps not so good, which we will also get to as well. But also, you know, plenty to talk about next time, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, we will rate and review it and give our own feelings about this show and whether or not you should buy it. And yeah, there's a lot to say on this one. There's a lot going on here. So until then, you can find all of our episodes, 500 of them, at BritishInvaders.com. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there. And you can also follow us on Threads and Instagram. We are British_Invaders_podcast on both of those platforms.
Yes, do drop by the socials and give us a follow and join in the conversation. And also come to the Voice of Geeks Network at VogueNetwork.com. You'll find British Invaders, you'll find other shows, you'll find Twitch streaming, gaming content, all sorts of geek-related stuff at the Voice of Geeks at VogueNetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, Eamon in England also signing off.